You're listening to the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast with your host and nutritional therapist, Danielle Hamilton. I'm Danny, and I'm here to answer your questions and give you the tools to find freedom from sugar and carb cravings with real food and lifestyle tips so you can heal your body, balance your blood sugar, and feel amazing. Remember, the content discussed in this podcast is intended as general information only. It's not intended as one-on-one medical advice, so please consult with your healthcare practitioner before making any changes in diet and lifestyle. Let's get started with today's show. Hello, hello, friends, and welcome back to another episode of the Unlock the Sugar Shackles podcast. I am so grateful for you all being here. If it's your first time here, welcome. Thank you for joining, and make sure you hit that subscribe button so you know whenever I release a new episode, it will be shown to you in your feed. And for those of you who are longtime listeners, welcome back. Thank you for being here. Thank you for being so loyal to the show. And just a reminder, if you are loving this show, I have a tiny favor to ask you. There's this algorithm with podcasts, and so the more ratings and comments they have, the more subscribers they have, the more they will put your show in front of new people. So if you're loving this show, you want to give back, all you need to do is if you're listening on the Purple Podcast app on your phone, if you have an iPhone, if you haven't already, just hit those 5 stars and leave a really quick review. I would appreciate it so much. So thank you so much. And speaking of being grateful, that brings us to our gratitude section of the show. And the reason why we do this gratitude section is because this is a quote that I got from Google, that gratitude is strongly and consistently associated with greater happiness. Gratitude helps people feel more positive emotions, relish good experiences, improve their health, deal with adversity, and build strong relationships. Personally, my gratitude is that I am so grateful to be truly living out my dreams by having my own nutrition business, by being able to help so many people find more joy in their lives because they're feeling better, by being able to make my passion into a career, working with my wife, who is my best friend. And I've also been doing these exercises lately where I need to write what my best life would look like and all the things that I would do. And honestly, there is so much that I already do, that I already have. And it feels amazing to realize that I'm kind of just living out my dreams here. And it's amazing. You know, there's always things that we can want and things that could be better. But I just feel like I'm living such an incredible life. And I feel so grateful for this opportunity. I know it doesn't happen all the time, and I'm just so grateful to all of you for supporting me. So feel free to pause the podcast here if you'd like to think about what you're grateful for, and make sure you sit in that feeling for at least 20 seconds. Really let those feelings of gratitude wash over your body, emanate, you know, out into the universe, and make sure it changes your vibe. So don't think about something that you're like, oh, you know, I'm grateful for my son, even though he, you know, pissed me off today. Like, don't think about something that's going to give you any resistance or negativity. And if you can't think about anything that you're grateful for because, you know, you're upset about something, or you're in quarantine, or, you know, there's a lot of negative things happening. And, you know, I know people are listening and their health is not in the best spot. So find something that you can just feel truly grateful for with no strings attached, no resistance. And sometimes starting with like a pet or like a grandparent, that can be a really great place to start. You know, you think about your cat, I think about Sadie, and it makes me feel all warm and fuzzy on the inside. So start with something that's really, really easy for you, very simple. Maybe it's just, you know, you can see, and how amazing is it to have your gift of sight? You know, something simple, but sit in that feeling for 20 seconds, and I hope it goes well. All right, so some quick updates with you. There's not that much new stuff going on, except my birthday is coming up this week on March 3rd, which is fun. I'm going to dinner with a few friends and getting a massage, which is what I specifically asked for. I am an Enneagram 1, as some of you know from listening to this show, and we are called like the reformers, the perfectionists, or the improvers. And that is so me. I'm always like trying to improve everything. I'm very specific. And so of course it's like, of course I asked for exactly what I wanted for my birthday instead of being surprised. I'm like, I want a full body massage and I want to go to this place for dinner and that's it. And yeah, so I asked for my own birthday gift, but I really recommend asking for a massage because massages are the best. So then On the 7th, that is our first wedding anniversary. So that's on Sunday the 7th. I mean, this is crazy. I know so many of you have listened to the episodes where I was planning my wedding, and now it's like a full year later, and it was quite the crazy year, I might add. Literally, I got married and a pandemic and quarantine started 4 days later on the 11th. So it definitely was not the way I expected our first year of marriage to go, but here we are. So the other update I have for you is that I have a surprise guest for the show. So I will save that for one little bit. I'm going to bring you that guest in 1 second, but I wanted to tell you before we move on is that I just wanted to share an exciting thing before we jump into the questions and our new guest is that enrollment for the 4th round of my signature group coaching program, the Balance Unlocked Project, is actually opening on March 5th. So if you are listening to this before the 5th, you can sign up for the VIP waitlist, which is in the show notes or in my Instagram bio if that's easier for you. A lot of people don't know where the show notes are, and that it makes me laugh because I didn't know either. I've shared that story before. Like, I was like, where are these elusive show notes? So if you're listening on Apple Podcasts, you actually just will just keep scrolling. So you're looking at the podcast, you just keep scrolling and the show notes are underneath. On Spotify, there's show notes when you click on the episode. So it's different on all the platforms, but usually they should be pretty easy to find. So look around for them. It might not say the words show notes. So don't look for those words. Just look for like links and kind of maybe an episode description. Those are the show notes if you can't find them. So the Balance Unlocked Project is an 8-week program that is sort of part online program, part individual coaching, and part group coaching. So it's kind of the best of both worlds in this like trifecta. So what you get is that you have over 10 hours of video modules and downloads with new information being unlocked every single week. At the beginning of the course, you're going to fill out a really detailed questionnaire before beginning, and then you get this really awesome chart back that's going to help guide you through the program, where you're at, focusing on your own issues or your deficits, and if you have like a nutrient deficiency, something like that. And then you can take it at your own pace, at your own intensity, depending on where you're at in your journey. I have some people come to the program who are just starting their journey. They are trying to go sugar-free. They're coming from a standard American diet. And then I have people who have been doing keto for years or even carnivore, and then everyone in between. So there is no specific person that this group is for because it really will give you wherever you're at. It's kind of meeting you wherever you're at. And then I have a lot of people who this program is yours for a lifetime. So a lot of people will do the course and they'll go through it once and kind of get to a certain level, and then they go through it again and even deepen whatever they've been doing. So let's say the first time they decided they just wanted to go sugar-free and dabble with some fasting and that was it. And then I shouldn't say that's it because there's so many other things that we do with like lifestyle and adrenals and liver and all these things, but there's so many different layers, and then they can take their diet to the next level. Maybe they try keto the next time through. And again, these modules and videos are yours for a lifetime, so you'll always have access to them. You can do it whenever you'd like. So in addition, every week we have group coaching calls, and then there's also this awesome non-Facebook private online community where you can meet the other group members who are other like-minded people, other people on this journey with you. You can get accountability, you can share wins and struggles, and also ask questions. And it has been so awesome, these groups and all the women in them. Usually they're women, but men are welcome. That's just generally the demographic that I get. And if you don't identify as a man or woman, you're absolutely welcome as well. And it has just been so awesome. And all the members of the groups are like, Dani, how can we continue working together? How can we keep going? Because I don't want this group to end. So I recently ended up making a private VIP membership called Dani's Inner Circle, which is for past group coaching clients and private clients. So if you are a past client of mine, expect to be getting an email soon about the new membership option. But yeah, so make sure that if you're interested, if you're like, I want to learn more, I'm not sure if this is right for me, I have questions, or like, I'm totally doing this, sign me up, when can I enroll? make sure you just get on this waitlist because that's where I'm going to send exclusive promotions, and only my waitlist members are going to be eligible for these special deals and bonuses. So even if you're like, I know I'm doing it, I'll just wait, just make sure you get on the waitlist too, because then you'll get your special promo codes. Don't miss out on that. And enrollment will open March 5th, and then the program itself starts on March 15th, and it goes for 8 weeks, which takes us into May already. Can you even believe that? It's so wild. So yeah, let's get started, and I am going to introduce to you our special guest. Okay, so I don't know if you guessed it or not, but my special guest is my wife, LJ. LJ, welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm excited to try this out. Also, definitely really nervous.
That is totally okay. I already told her we can delete anything and start over. So I'm very excited to have you. And I'm also thankful you're here to read these questions and keep me on track. I've been definitely wanting a co-host because, as you know, I tend to ramble. And I did also want to mention that LJ, so her background, she got her license in massage therapy and personal training, and she is a functional range mobility specialist. She knows so much about the body, and I'm trying to convince her to let me interview her for the show one day, but we'll start with this. So no pressure. All right, LJ, hit me with the first question.
All right. Why is it important to be a fat burner instead of a sugar burner? Are some people naturally one over the other?
Okay, so that's a great question. People are actually born in ketosis. So breastfed babies are actually in ketosis. And people are born with this ability to burn both sugar and fat for fuel. That's what we mean when we say metabolically flexible. And that's kind of what we mean when we say being a fat burner. So someone who's easily able to burn fat for fuel. So if you think about it, we have these two fuel sources. We have sugar, we have fat. We have fats coming from food. We have fats that are in the form of ketones that are liver makes, and then also our own body fat. So we want to be able to easily burn fat, obviously, because for weight loss reasons, but also because it provides us with this endless supply of energy. So if we're stuck in this sugar burning mode, then we can't easily burn fat, and that keeps us in this kind of cycle of being dependent on eating carbohydrates and sugar for fuel. So it's important to be a fat burner and have this metabolic flexibility so we don't always need to eat carbohydrates, which will really tend to put us on this blood sugar roller coaster for many of us. Some people have a better carbohydrate tolerance than others, but most of us, especially with how, you know, maybe you saw my post on Instagram, how fruits look nowadays. They're just way more starchy. They're filled with more sugar. This used to be like this root thing and have like a tiny, tiny bit of fruit, and it was all seeds. And so it was really hard to get a lot of carbohydrates back when we were first a species. I don't know. What do you call that? Like when we were
race.
Yeah. When we were evolving. So it's definitely something that we have all these carbohydrates now. It's no wonder why we can't tolerate them very well, or most people can't. It's because we did not evolve with these foods. These foods are not normal. They're not natural. Even fruit is not natural. It's natural because it comes out of the ground, but we bred it to be very filled with sugar. And so a lot of people have this difficulty tolerating carbohydrates. And so what that leads us to do, like to what happens, is that we end up being on this blood sugar roller coaster because we're dependent on carbohydrates as our energy starts to decrease. So our body will sense our energy is going down. And if we can't easily burn fat, we can't turn that fat burning on. What happens is our body will send out signals that we need sugar. It's like, oh my goodness, get me sugar. Those symptoms are things like anxiety, trembling, shaking, dizziness, headaches, cravings, irritability, nausea, shakiness, dizziness, those kind of symptoms. And so those are all symptoms of low blood sugar, but all those symptoms, what they do is they're driving you towards getting more fuel, which in this case would be sugar or carbohydrates. So then you tend to go towards these sugary, more carbohydrate-rich foods, and then it puts you back on that roller coaster. So it's important to be able to burn fat for fuel because this will keep your energy levels more stable. It will help balance your hormones. It will help you tend towards having better hormone balance, and it will keep you, anything involving blood sugar, if we have it right, so being able to burn fat, is what it will do for us is it will set us up for a position of having optimal health. So putting that in the other way, you just can't have optimal health if you are not a fat burner. So I don't know if that answers the question, but I hope.
No, I think that's great. And I know for me personally, my goal isn't necessarily weight loss, but for me, when I'm in a fat burning state, I feel less irritable and I have more energy, as opposed to when I'm a sugar burner, the energy isn't as consistent. I feel irritable and it's this roller coaster throughout the day. So it's definitely a benefit for me to be a fat burner for my mood.
Yeah, definitely. So there's all sorts of different symptoms that can show up. So thank you for sharing your insight, because you've done, you know, both of those. You've been in a fat burning ketosis state, but also used to be a sugar burner for sure.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And for some of us, it shows up in different ways. So when I was a sugar burner, it would show up for me as like, I would always be craving sweets. I would need to eat every few hours and I would hold on to weight. I would have acne, different things like that. For you, it was more like you'd have a lot of mood issues and things like that, right?
Yeah, and also not like I noticed the most at the gym too. I wasn't able to sustain like throughout my workouts. It was by the end, I was almost like in this blood sugar crash. When I was in the sugar burning state, and when I'm in a fat burning state, I can go easily through my workouts and then some. So that was a huge thing for me, considering I work out quite often.
Yeah, that's really good. That's a great points to bring up. All right, hit me with question number two.
All right, what are signs that you can't burn body fat for fuel?
Okay, so some of the signs that you can't burn body fat for fuel are some of those signs that I mentioned earlier. So these would be things like the shakiness, dizziness, cravings, just tendency towards wanting higher sugar foods, headaches, and not being able to go that long between meals. And so those are the early signs of blood sugar dysregulation. And then some of the later ones, as it starts to get worse, you start to have more and more symptoms. And the symptoms start to be more severe. So some other things that you might experience would be things like hormonal imbalance. You might have difficulty losing weight. You may have skin tags, darkening of the skin. You might have issues with other hormonal stuff, like I said, the PCOS or infertility. And then as it really starts to progress, you might see things like prediabetes, type 2 diabetes, mood issues are common, as we mentioned before, depression and anxiety, potentially fatty liver, obesity, cardiovascular issues, joint issues, and then everything just starts to get worse. So maybe you had fatigue before, but now it's way worse. And then healing is slowed, premature aging, failing memory, so maybe Alzheimer's, and then poor cholesterol numbers and worsening numbers at the doctor, like if you get your blood glucose or A1C numbers. So these are all signs that you can't burn body fat for fuel. And coincidentally, they're all signs of high blood sugar, dysregulated blood sugar, and insulin resistance. So all of these symptoms kind of go hand in hand because they all are talking about the same thing. You can't burn body fat for fuel when you have insulin resistance. This is kind of at the root of it because the insulin, when you have insulin resistance, that means we have a lot of insulin in the blood. The body starts to naturally become resistant to anything that's kind of going on for a little bit too long. So the way I describe resistance, it could be with a bunch of things. So for example, let's say you put on a shirt and there's a tag on it and it's kind of like itching you. And then in a few seconds, you kind of forget about it. It goes away. You already developed resistance to this message of the tag itching you. Then there's another example I give where, let's say you're listening to headphones and there's noise in the background. So you turn it up a little bit and then you hear some more noise. You keep turning it up and you're listening to the music. No big deal. It's not at like a very high volume or anything to you. Then someone comes in the room and you have to pause your music, answer the question, and then they leave, you play the music again. Oh, it's like so loud. And so that was because you automatically develop that resistance over time to that signal of the music. Same thing if you walk into like a club and it's super loud at first, and then by the end of the night, you're like dancing in front of the speaker. It's not loud anymore because you had resistance to this. Same thing with alcohol. It's like you develop a resistance, so you need more and more and more to reach that same threshold. So insulin resistance is blocking us from burning fat because when there's insulin in the blood, the message that the body is getting is that everything should be stored. Store sugar, store fat, store, store, store. It's a building hormone, so it's a very strong signal that's being sent to the body. We cannot be, and I've said this before, in a fat burning state in the same time we're in a fat storage state. So it really blocks fat burning. And so it's this insulin resistance that's at the root of having all these blood sugar issues and having these body fuel burning issues as well. So we can't tap into the stored body fat if insulin is in the blood because it's preventing it.
So how do you switch from sugar burning to fat burning? Is it just through diet or are there other lifestyle things you can do?
So switching from sugar burning to fat burning, it's a great point to add that there's lifestyle things because it's not just diet. It needs to also, there's so many different camps out there and different research coming out. So it's not an exact science, but there are dietary and lifestyle things that are both important to do. So this is the approach that I take with my clients and my group coaching. It's a very holistic approach. So first we start with diet because that is the lowest hanging fruit. That's where you're going to see huge changes with your blood sugar. So we would definitely start with lowering carbohydrates, taking out processed carbs. We would take out added sugar, things like that. Then we would employ some of those hacks. So we're maybe having apple cider vinegar before our meal. We are working on having veggies, then protein, then fat, and then have the carbs at the end. So there's these little things that we can do to help to make sure that our blood sugar is not spiking so high. And then you can systematically lower carbohydrates. So I went from a standard American diet to a paleo diet, which was definitely lower in carbs, but the way I was eating it wasn't that low in carbs because I was adding all the fruits, all the sweet potatoes, all the plantains, all the kombucha, all the like plantain chips, and honey and maple syrup, like all the sweeteners. So I wasn't doing a very low carbohydrate diet. So then what I did was just take out all those starchy carbohydrates and sugary foods, and then it left the rest of the like plant kingdom, which would be vegetables and things like that, and then meats and eggs and animal foods. And those were like kind of leaning into those more fat, protein dense foods are a great way to start switching over. And then, of course, you can really go into delving into a ketogenic sort of diet, as well as practicing some intermittent fasting to really start to make some changes. However, I see a ton of people who are doing a beautiful ketogenic diet and they're fasting and they're changing things up and their blood sugar is still high. And these people are mysterious to me and I'm finding them more and more and more. And so I'm really focusing on the other lifestyle things that really need to start happening in order to really move the needle. So we'll look at things like first circadian rhythm and sleep. That is hugely important. So prioritizing sleep, getting to bed early, putting yourself in bed, turning the lights off. Like we always turn the lights down super low and they're very dark. We use the red light bulb and we use some like colorful Christmas lights that are kind of like a pink hue. We use the Himalayan salt lamp, candles, all these things at night, and we turn off all the overhead lights. This really just helps calm the body. Doesn't it feel so much more?
Like, absolutely. And like the sleep is just like really, it speaks for itself. You know, the sleep is so much better when you have this lighting and it's not just these bright lights right before bed, especially on your phone, like blue light. You know, taking that out has been a huge game changer.
Yeah, and we both have an Aura ring, and so we can see this difference in our sleep. And so, yeah, the blue light, so you want to get out those blue lights. So a lot of people are doing screens right before bed. You know, people are leaving the TV on when they fall asleep. You really want to get the lights out of the bedroom. And so setting up your night can help you to have better days. And so set up your night, turn your phone off by a certain time, set an alarm on your phone, make all your apps go off. There's all different apps that can, or like screen time, downtime, I think it's called on the iPhone, and it turns off your apps. So then you're less likely to be on your phone and using your phone because it's like we're talking about addiction here. Like, we are pretty much all addicted to our phones and, you know, looking at things on screens. And I've even had people say, like, well, if I don't have a screen on, like, I literally don't know what to do. And that's kind of crazy that we're at this point in life, because I'm sure she's not the only person who has that thought, right? I'm, you know, sometimes we're like, what do we do now? So we have been kind of playing a lot of games. We play like Boggle. We play different card games. At night, we'll pull like angel cards, and we'll do different meditations. We'll do mobility work, like light yoga, meditations, massage, all sorts of like calming, relaxing activities. People do puzzles. Think about if the power were to go out, what would you set yourself up with? One of the other things I was thinking is like reading. So reading a fiction book, and, you know, of course it would have to be with a low light, but all of these activities are things that can help you to wind down and get you to bed earlier. And the best thing is, like, honestly, if you're bored and you don't have a screen stimulating you to stay up, so you just go to bed earlier. And that's what most of us need to do. I get my best sleep when I have like 9 hours of sleep. So that's really important. And then in terms of your circadian rhythm, you'll want to make sure you expose yourself to light early in the morning. So getting out and doing an early morning walk, even making sure that you're not really wearing your sunglasses, because this allows the light to get into our eyes. We are inside most of the day. We're exposed to this artificial light on our screens. And so as much as you can get back to nature, that's huge. So the other thing we do, we'll just sit out on the back porch because we have a screen in back porch. We'll turn the lights really low or just turn them off and just sit in the darkness. It feels like we're camping, and it's like really fun. It's really chill, and it's really relaxing. Like, you feel so relaxed on your body, right? Mm-hmm. Yeah. And so that is all important for sleep. And then your circadian rhythm, which are governed by hormones. So this is really important because all hormones affect other hormones. So getting your sleep right is really important. And I know that a lot of people with blood sugar issues can't sleep well. And so both of them kind of need to improve together, because they can both kind of knock each other out of sync or out of balance. So they have this bi-directional relationship. So blood sugar can impact sleep, sleep can impact blood sugar. So that would be the sleep thing. And then one last thing about that is that a lot of people are doing fasting. A lot of people equate intermittent fasting to skipping breakfast. And I just wanted to say that if you have this thought, that's actually not necessarily what intermittent fasting is. Intermittent fasting is just fasting for, you know, 24 hours or less, but it doesn't necessarily have to be that you skip breakfast. And in fact, I recommend that if you're doing intermittent fasting, that you actually skip dinner instead of breakfast, because this is more in sync with our circadian rhythm. And so it allows you, when you're awake, you wake up, you need energy for the day, you have the cortisol surge, you want to be eating during your waking hours, and then at night you don't need any more energy. What are you going to be doing? Sitting there, hopefully not, you know, watching TV, but you're just going to be chilling, so you don't really need that much more energy. And then when you sleep, like, I always say that my ring gets so mad at me if I sleep, if I eat before bed, it's always like, did you eat too late at night? I'm like, yes, how did you know? Because my heart rate variability stays high. And so a lot of people will be doing one meal a day, or they're fasting and eating their meals at night, and then they're digesting while they're supposed to be detoxing and sleeping. And this can really impact it. And then the other thing, the next kind of area of lifestyle would be building muscle. That is hugely important. And it's really, really important that we're not just like, yes, it's important to go for walks. It's important to move your body. It's important to put your joints through all the range of motion, so we maintain that. But in terms of moving the needle for improving our fat burning and our blood sugar regulation, it all comes down to building muscle. And a lot of, there is some new research coming out saying that the insulin resistance is actually starting in the muscle, and this could be from lack of using it. So Dr. Ben Bickman recommends that you use your muscle in, and you have to use all of them because they can all become insulin resistant. And he recommends using them at the maximum intensity that you can. And so this is when you work out that you should be going to failure. If all you have is a 5-pound dumbbell, You lift that thing until you literally can't lift it anymore, right? You can go slower to increase how hard it is. I'm sure you can give us some tips on building muscle.
Oh, absolutely. Like, it's all about, you know, you can slow down, you can pause, you can make things harder until failure. It's not necessarily that you have to be lifting the heaviest weight you can possibly lift, but there are hacks to burn out your muscles without, like, killing yourself on the actual weight.
Okay, cool. So we can pause, we can go slower. And then what about if you don't have any weights? Can you still build muscle? Because a lot of people are like, my gym is closed or I don't feel comfortable. Can you still build muscle if you don't use weights?
Yeah, absolutely. A lot of times, you know, when I used to have clients in the gym, I would do body weight exercises with them. First of all, to see if their joints could handle the motion that we're going to put them through. But also, yes, you can absolutely build muscle without weights. It's once again, coming back to slowing down, pausing, you know, different positions, like you can make things pretty hard without weights at all. So that's a good way to actually start.
Okay, cool. So things like using your body weight, getting like maybe a TRX band or something like that. Mm-hmm. So there are definitely ways to build muscle and work out without using really, really heavy weights. Although if you are into lifting and using those heavy weights, definitely go for it, because that's a great way as well if your joints can handle it. So building muscle is really important. And also, as I mentioned before, I'm not knocking walking, but it might not be enough for people. So walking is hugely important because it gets you outside. There's so many benefits to it. Walking after a meal can help to lower the glucose response, and we need to move our body in all different ways, or else we can potentially lose the ability to move it like that. I know I used to be a competitive dancer when I was younger, and I cannot dance the way I used to because I just haven't, I haven't done it in so long. I could still tap though, but I can't move my body in that way anymore because I just haven't used it. So you don't use it, you lose it. It happens with your muscles and your mobility. And then the other lifestyle factor, of course, that comes to mind is stress management. And this is like the biggest one. I posted about this the other day on Instagram saying like chronic stress is worse for you than sugar. And in a way, it really can be. So our bodies were designed to handle intermittent stresses like working out, like cold exposure, heat exposure, but not these chronic stressors like a pandemic, like constantly being exposed to EMFs and being on our phone and like relationship issues and taxes and all these problems. We are not meant to deal with all of these. And so a lot of us are stuck in this perpetual state of stress, and it is causing so many issues. And I'm going to call out LJ right here, but she was in a job that she did not like and was causing her so much stress, and it caused her to lose a lot of weight. And she had kind of like bags, not bags under your eyes, like dark circles under your eyes. And just your face just didn't look as like, it didn't have that color in it, that life in it. And stress was like eating her away. And now that she's not in that stressful job anymore, effortlessly, she's putting on muscle. She has beautiful color to her face. Like, she looks vibrant and healthy again. And you could just see the difference between someone who's stressed out and then someone who is not kind of burdened with that heavy stress all the time. But the other thing is that we tend to think of stress like, oh, I have a stressful job, so I'm stressed. But there are tons of things, unfortunately, that contribute to our stress. Yes, some of them are emotional, like different relationships or things that are like mental that we're thinking about, like politics and all that stuff. But then there's also physical stressors. So the toxins that we're exposed to, chronic infections that we have, let's say in our gut, or parasites or something like that, these heavy metals or phthalates or things like structural abnormalities or sitting too often or not kind of getting out of that stress cycle. Some of us are just so used to waking up and taking on our day and we have to do this, and we just never allow our body to kind of come out of that stress state. And so we have to think about stress in all areas of our life. And then so that means that people should be stepping out of this stress state as often as they can, so then their body can get into a parasympathetic state. Parasympathetic is that rest and digest state. That's where all our hormones balance. That's the state that we lose weight. That's the state where we can digest our food. That's where the magic happens. And so getting into a parasympathetic state should be at the top of your list if you are someone who identifies with having a lot of stress. Or maybe you don't think you have a lot of stress, but you have these symptoms and you have these blood sugar issues, your blood sugar is chronically high. Doing some deep breathing, starting a meditation practice, journaling, doing guided meditations, progressive body relaxations. I did one the other day, and I remember that when I was going to these meditation yoga classes, the teacher would always tell me, relaxation is a muscle. The more often you do it, the better you get at it. And I was like, that sounds weird. Like, it seems like you could just relax. But when I was not practicing that, I would try to do these guided meditations and I would never get there to that really like that place where you feel like you just melted into a puddle on the floor. You feel so relaxed. Your whole body's like kind of like gently vibrating and you're just like a heavy puddle of mush. I don't know how else to describe it, but like that's the state that you want to get to where your whole body is letting go. And one of the easiest things, one, I guess, important thing is that I've talked a little bit on here before about completing the stress cycle. And so I think that's important too, that like if you have a stressful situation, that you do something to kind of break that state, whether that's like moving around, shaking your body, just like shaking off, like having like a dance party, or even just like tensing your body intensely and then relaxing it and tense it again and then relax it. So you're tensing every single muscle and then allowing it to relax. It helps to complete that stress cycle and get that stress state out of there. So I hope that makes sense.
That was great. All right. So I know you recommend the keto diet when you're trying to switch over. So what would you say to someone who is vegetarian or resistant to going very high fat?
So for someone who is resistant to going high fat, this fat phobia is definitely going to, it persists in our society, even though it has been debunked a bunch of times. And people are stuck thinking like, oh, calories will make me fat, or if I eat fat, it makes me fat. And this is just not really true unless you're eating the wrong types of fat and you're eating them with processed carbohydrates. So if you're eating a high fat diet, the hormonal signal that your body is getting is almost nothing. But when we eat high carbohydrates, the hormonal signal that's happening is that we get a big spike of insulin, and then all that insulin is saying, store fat, store fat. So then we're in a fat storage mode, not a fat burning mode. So if we stay with a high fat diet and a low carbohydrate diet, we can potentially put our body into a fat burning state, which is kind of reverse of what we have been taught. And then in terms of someone who's vegetarian or kind of not ready to go totally high fat, some of these reasons could be because their bodies, they can naturally kind of be deterred from eating fat because their bodies aren't digestively ready to handle that. So a lot of people coming from a low fat or vegetarian or vegan diet don't have the digestive fire to really digest a lot of these high fat and protein foods. And I see this very like all the time. And people will tend to lose their taste for meat. And they're like, oh, I just don't really want it. It kind of sits in my stomach like a rock. And so these people tend to have lower stomach acid and lower bile, or their bile is kind of like sludgy. And so it's not flowing right. And so actually I talked about this in the very last episode I did, number 66. So you can go back and listen to that one, or go back and listen to the episode I did on digestion. And that I think is episode number 7. But switching over to a keto diet, I would really recommend to listen to that last episode I did, because some people aren't ready for a keto diet to switch their fat to going really high, and that could be very detrimental to the body. So if you're eating a low fat diet now, but are like, okay, you know, I think I want to start having more fat in my diet, don't go from like low fat to keto in one day. Start to work your way up and support your digestion as you need to, because that will make the transition so, so much better. And I would say to someone who's a little bit resistant to this, that go back and look at the science. There's so much debunk that has been debunked, like all this stuff from Ansel Keys, this leftover information. He did the 7-country study where he tried to prove that dietary fat is related to heart attacks and cardiovascular disease. And he had 22 countries. It was called the 22 countries study, but a bunch of those countries didn't fit his hypothesis. So he just erased the data, and then he published the 7 countries study. And it's like, what the heck? You can't do that. And that one single study actually determined and like drove all this legislation that was passed in this country for like the FDA and the, the food pyramid and the food guidelines in this country. And so it's been indoctrinated into us that fat is bad and fat is terrible, but we need to be eating these good kinds of fats, and they're so important. Fat makes, it surrounds every single cell in the body. It makes up the cell membrane. It cushions our organs. It helps with energy production. It helps keep our blood sugar stable. It helps to it helps you with balancing your hormones and creating healthy hormones. Same thing with cholesterol. So all of these things that were very demonized are actually so good for us. And we need to, of course, avoid those toxic vegetable oils like the canola, soybean, safflower, those. But having the other ones are really, really important.
So what do you say to those who will say, but I will never be able to reduce my sweets? Every time I try removing them, I'm craving them even more. So basically, what did you say to me at the beginning of my journey?
So the thing with sweets, there's a few things to say. So if someone is removing sweets and then craving them, a lot of times there could be these underlying gut things going on. So first of all, we're very stuck in this cycle of craving sweets in our brain. So we have this dopamine pathway. It's this reward signal. So if we don't have it, our body starts to go into this kind of like state of detoxification, withdrawal, excuse me. So we're kind of in this withdrawal state and we're feeling really low. We have a low mood. And then we think, well, I'm just somebody who needs sugar. So we go back to the sugar because it's the only thing that makes us feel good. Then there are people who might have candida infections in their gut and this overgrowth of certain bacteria and yeast in the gut that are just like begging for sugar. And so what happens is you end up like really just the bacteria are 100 times more in our body than our body cells. So we're 100 times more bacterial cells than human cells. And so a lot of times if your bacteria is all crying out for sweets, they win, you lose, because they outnumber you. And so sometimes it's not willpower. It's you need to do work on your gut first, and then you'll be able to reduce the sweets. And then the other thing is that there are certain supplements that really help to reduce sweets, sweet cravings. And so things like L-glutamine is amazing. And even a supplement that helps with bile flow, which is called Beta Plus by Biotics Research. These are all available in my Full Script store. But these actually can help with intense sugar cravings. And so it leads me to believe that if our gallbladder is not functioning properly, if we're not able to break down fats properly, we don't have those fats to stabilize the blood sugar, which causes us to have more blood sugar volatility, meaning it's going up and down in these big spikes, and that will cause us to crave sweets. So being on the blood sugar roller coaster is a huge factor. A lot of times people too, they'll take out sugar, but they're not taking out starch. And so they're spiking their blood sugar still, and then their blood sugar comes crashing down. So then they want sweets, but they're trying not to have them. And then the other thing is that once you kind of break this cycle of having sweets, then your palate will tend to adjust. And it takes some time. Like when I switched to keto, I was still having sugar cravings the whole like first month and a half probably. I was also relying on artificial sweeteners at that time. So having artificial sweeteners, whether it's stevia, monk fruit, erythritol, these sweeteners can really keep you, your palate, kind of trained to wanting this sweet taste. And so then when you don't have it, you you want it, and then you have the sweet taste, and then your body's always, your mouth or your palate's always craving this sweetness. So getting used to savory things, it takes time, but that's another way to kind of attack this. And then some people have emotional ties to food. Some people need to do a lot of deep work when it comes to emotional eating. And I'm going to have a guest on the podcast later in March who works with binge eating, but there are so many people out there who specialize in this. And unfortunately, that's not something that I specialize in. But my binge eating went away when I did keto because my blood sugar was balanced. So a lot of times you try to reduce your sweets, but you're not necessarily increasing your fat or doing things to balance your blood sugar. So you're just kind of white knuckling it and you're just kind of using willpower. So if you do the work to balance the blood sugar, have enough fat so you're satiated, you're working on nutrient deficiencies, those are things that can really, really help. And so you can go at it from a different stance instead of just trying to white knuckle it and pull out all the sweets and just hope for the best. We need to set ourselves up for success. And this might mean we need magnesium, we need chromium, we need B vitamins, these vitamins and nutrients that are lost when we overeat sugar. So there's a lot of things in terms of like nutritional therapy that we can do to help to improve our ability to stay away from sweets. And then the main thing is that over time, your palate changes big time. You can taste sweetness from Brussels sprouts when you have them, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah, makes sense. So people think that they need to eat every 3 hours, but you recommend not to snack in order to shift into fat burning. Can you explain why this is important?
Yeah, so that's another bad thing that we were taught about having to eat every few hours. And so when we're eating every few hours, we're spiking our blood sugar and insulin every few hours, and we're not allowing the insulin levels to come down so we can actually shift into a fat-burning state. So thinking about the more insulin is in the blood, the less we're in a fat-burning state, then we can kind of deduce that when we stop eating and give periods of breaks in between our meals, then the insulin can come down and then we can go into a fat burning mode. So when we see the blood sugar go up, like on a CGM or on just a finger prick meter, it's important to note that the blood sugar will come down, but the insulin will stay elevated a little bit longer than the blood sugar does. So it's not like, oh, the blood sugar came down in like an hour, so did my insulin, so it's okay if I eat in another 2 hours. That's actually not right. The insulin stays kind of elevated for a little while longer than the blood sugar. However, there is the caveat of if you are having reactive hypoglycemia, you will probably not be able to stop snacking right away, but the goal is to get you to not eat quite as often. But unfortunately, the advice for people with reactive hypoglycemia is so bad right now. They just say eat more carbs, and that doesn't help.
I think the snacking was the biggest difference I saw when I started eating in the morning instead of fasting in the morning. So that's just a
like a personal anecdote?
Yeah, absolutely. Just something I've noticed. And I actually enjoy eating in the morning now and not snacking at night because my sleep's better. So.
Oh, that's great. So LJ would normally have coffee and then go to work and eat lunch and dinner, but then be kind of like snacking all night because she's like, I'm still hungry. And so this is like when I posted on Instagram, like if you're snacking all night or you're driven to snack at night, you probably didn't have enough protein during the day. So instead, she added back in breakfast, mm-hmm. and then at night, you just like kind of stopped needing to snack.
Didn't have the cravings, and honestly, it just felt good.
Yeah, that's great. Mm-hmm. So it's nice to have her on here as my little testimony to what I'm teaching. Absolutely. I didn't pay her to say this, I promise.
So what would you say to someone who would say fats are high in calories?
Well, we already talked about we tend to be fat phobic in this country, but also a lot of people are still with this old kind of mentality of calories in, calories out. And there are still people that very much believe in this. And I do believe that if you're overeating calories to a certain extent, it can block you from, let's say, burning your own fat. So there are people who do keto and they're doing, you know, these bulletproof coffees. I talked about this last episode, but they're eating like tons of fat in their coffee and then having fat bombs and having these recipes with like a whole cup of heavy cream. And they're eating so much fat that they're actually blocking their own body fat burning because their body's burning the fat, but it's burning the fat that they're eating and not their own fat burning. So that's a problem. But when we have like calories in, calories out, our bodies are not thermostats. They are not closed systems. So calories in, calories out doesn't work because if I eat 1,000 calories of Twinkies, my body is going to have a really different metabolic response and hormonal response to those Twinkies than if I were to eat 1,000 calories in ribeye steaks, which I would pick the ribeye steaks, hands down. So the body is going to do different things based on what these calories are. So calories are just the energy needed to raise the temperature of 1 kilogram of water, 1 degree Celsius. So this has nothing to do with nutrition. It's like ridiculous. It's just one unit of measure. It's very easy to measure. So people go crazy on the calories. But calories in, calories out, it's just, even people are like, oh, well, you can't use that extreme example. It's like, well, you should be able to use every example if you're proving this hypothesis. Mm-hmm. So yes, fat does have more calories than carbohydrates, but you don't eat as much, like I wouldn't eat the same amount, let's say volume of butter as I would eat sweet potato. You put a pat of butter on a sweet potato, right? You don't put a block of butter on a sweet potato. So you're eating less. Like, it's just a silly argument to me, but it is a fair question because a lot of people, this is, you know, what they're thinking because it's like, oh, fats are high in calories. But when you're not eating a ton of like blood sugar spiking foods, it's okay to have these higher calorie foods.
And it's also what people have been taught when it comes to calories. You know, calories are like the only measure of health. And we've, you know, from research and like, you know, progression throughout the health industry, we know now that that is not the only measure of health. It's actually quite far from it.
Yeah. So what people have been taught can really stay in our minds, like fats are high in calories, so we should avoid them. And we should avoid, you know, we should snack all the time and we should eat carbohydrates all the time. I can't tell you how many clients of mine will say, well, I went to the doctor and like the only thing that they told me is I need to eat more carbs. And it's like, why does everyone think that that's the answer? And it's because it's coming from the doctors who are not being taught good, solid nutrition information. And even, you know, we can go down a whole rabbit hole with this, but yeah, so those are, that wraps up all the questions for today. So thank you, LJ, for being here. Thanks for...
Thank you for having me. It was really fun.
Oh, good. I'm glad you had fun and you're not so nervous anymore. You can see that we can stop and delete if we need to, right? So, thank you all for listening. Next week, I'm going to bring on a new segment of the show, which I'm really excited about, and that's going to be client testimonials or client experiences. So I'm going to walk you through, you know, what a client kind of came to me with and how they progressed, what we did, what helped them heal, and then the changes that they saw, because I want to show you also some positive testimonials of things just so you can see that you are not as alone as you think and that change is possible. And I always want to inspire you with hope. And even though, you know, I tell you some things that could be bad, like, oh, we need to avoid these things, I don't want you to ever feel like nervous or anxious about what you're doing. I want you to feel empowered with this information and also just know that these things, that change is possible, that just because you're struggling with something now doesn't mean, or you've feel like you've tried everything. You haven't tried everything, I promise. I'm really excited for you to also get the opportunity to sign up for my next group coaching, which is coming up on March 5th. Remember, if you want to sign up for the waitlist, the link will be in the show notes. Thank you again to LJ for coming on and being my lovely co-host today. Thank you all for listening, for your time, for your commenting, your likes, and your rating the show. And I will see you next week with another episode. All right. Have a good one. Bye.